That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by De Facto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to episode 101 of That Great Business Show, posting on the 19th of August, 2022. Foltister. I am Conal O'Moran. Every episode of this podcast is special to me, but this one, 101, is super special and is made for sharing with absolutely everyone in business or not. On this episode, we have a former high-performing heroin addict who has radically turned his life around, who now has a PhD in neuroscience, and who is, appropriately on episode 101, about to give us the 101, those are simple hints and hacks, all scientifically proven, that will transform you and your business radically.
That Great Business Show, Irish Podcast Awards 2022, Best Business Podcast Nominee. De Facto Shaving Oil, smooth as.
After 15 years of chronic heroin addiction, Dr. Brian Penny has been clean since October 2013. He now lectures, talks, and advises companies about how to make big and fundamental changes at both the personal and corporate levels. A close friend of mine saw him at a talk he gave at the company she works for, and she told me I just had to have him on the podcast. So here he is, Dr. Brian Penny. Welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you for having me, Conal. What a wonderful introduction. I'm delighted to be here.
When people, and we will kind of work around to the backstory eventually,
right.
But I'm just going to throw something at you. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
One of my favorite life hacks. Go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Go. And that's what it is. It's I think one of the biggest challenges that people have today, and one of the biggest problems is inaction. There's a lot of people know what to do, but they don't take the action to do it. And this is basically a science-based tool, evidence-based tool via Mel Robbins, who is absolutely phenomenal. And it's called the 5-second rule. And it's literally when you find yourself not willing to act and you find yourself just under pressure or uneasy about what you need to do, feeling stuck, I suppose, just count 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go and do it. And it's a really, really powerful technique to push you towards action.
Such as,
well, when you find yourself negotiating with yourself, I think that's a problem that many people face. And when we negotiate with ourselves, I think we're going to touch on this a lot today in terms of making values-based decisions over feelings-based decisions.
And that is really interesting because a lot of the stuff that I have read and listened to is about your feelings, because a lot of our guests here, and I love them, they talk about going with their gut. Are you going to diss that?
I love dissing things, but I'm not going to diss that, Conal. I'm really not. And the intuition, the gut, the instinct, that is so powerful and so important. And it probably trumps everything, in my opinion. When I talk about feelings-based decisions, it's the negative feelings. It's the fear. It's the anger. It's the wanting to take the comfortable way out. And the limbic brain, the old reptilian brain, it's all about self-preservation.
That's the one down at the bottom, isn't it?
It's sort of underneath the cortex, yeah. So the one at the bottom is like there's sort of three brain structures. So the limbic brain is sort of the one that sits underneath the cortex. And it's around self-preservation and the evolution of the species. And it wants to reproduce. It wants to take it easy. It wants to laze around in the grass. And we're living in a society now, like with cities in the last couple of 100 years, computers 60, 70 years, smartphones 20 years. Our evolution, biological machinery, hasn't evolved and hasn't adapted to the new way we live. And it wants to take the easy way out. And when we need to make decisions that align with what's important to us, like our jobs, like exercise, like honest conversations with people in the companies or otherwise, the limbic brain doesn't know and it wants to run away and hide. And this isn't a negotiation that's going on. It's saying, take a day off, press the snooze button, don't have that honest conversation, you'll get hurt. And it wants to take the easy way out. And you know what you need to do if you've thought about these things, and that's that negotiation. And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 cuts that in its tracks. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go, and just you go. You just do it.
And the one I was told that was the most basic one, to get out of bed.
to get out of bed.
Now, I have no problem with that because I would pop out. In fact, I prefer to get out of bed immediately. But so many people have this issue. And it's so simple.
It's so simple. And Mel Robbins, this was the challenge she had. So she's a highly successful woman now. And she was before she came up with this tool. But she found herself in addiction and chronic anxiety. And she was looking at the telly one day and she couldn't get out of bed for years. And she's seeing a rocket taking off. And it was 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. And it can't be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 because 6 comes after that. Go comes after 5. And she says, why can't I live my life like that? And she came up with this rule. But the great thing about this rule is, which she found out retrospectively, and it's why I really love it, is that it is grounded in science, and that's what makes it important for myself.
Next
hack. It's got to be the most, right? So there's lots of hacks around, and you often hear the things we have to do, and I could talk a little bit about exercise and all of these preemptive measures. The more you put work into yourself, good sleep, good nutrition, good exercise, the easier life is, and these things are highly, highly important. But lots of people, for reasons, many different reasons, can slack off on them. Life is busy. We all know that.
And it's also nicer, you know, to take it easy.
Nicer to take it easy. So how do you take it easy when you've let everything come on top? What do you do in the moment to relieve that stress? And one of the challenges that we have is that when we get stressed, when we get anxious about busy life, challenging relationships in work or at home, whatever that is, our biological machinery kicks in. We have a stress response, an anxiety response to that. And that is automatic. And it's why it's called the automatic response. It's the automatic nervous system. So it happens and there's nothing we can do about it. We can't say heart, slow down. We can't say liver, stop producing glycogen or whatever that is. That's part of the stress response. So what can we do about that? And one of the things we can do about that, the only part of that we can control, it's voluntary, is our breath. It's the diaphragm. And one of the most powerful evidence-based techniques that's out there is controlling your breath. And it's very, very simple. So when we breathe in, our lungs fill up with air, the diaphragm moves down and there's less pressure around our heart. So that sends a signal up to our brain saying, less pressure here, let's speed up the heartbeat.
Now you're saying that, is that absolutely true?
That this is the latest evidence-based research that is out there. This is 100% true. For now, because science is always moving. For now, but it is. It's really strong evidence-based research. And so what happens is that the brain sends a signal back down to the heart saying, right, speed up, because there's less pressure there on the heart. So it speeds the heart rate up. So the important thing to recognize here is that the in-breath speeds your heart rate up via the brain. So when you breathe out, your diaphragm pushes up and there's more compression on your heart. This sends a signal to your brain saying, we're under pressure here, we need to calm down. So the brain sends a signal back down to the heart, calm down, slow down. So when we have a stress response, what happens is we are in fight and flight system. So we need energy to run or to fight the situation. It's probably up in our heads, so we can't actually fight the situation, but our brain thinks we need energy. So we need oxygen for the blood. We need oxygen for the energy. Our liver produces glycogen to create that energy. Our pupils dilate. Our cognitive center shuts down. All of this stuff happens, and that is the fight and flight response. But a big element is the heart rate speeds up to carry the oxygen around the body. Now, what the opposite of that does, what this breathing technique does, is it slows down that response. But the key piece is that you need to take a longer out-breath than an in-breath. So very simply, breathe in for 3 seconds, breathe out for 6 seconds.
And you know where you learned that as well? In yoga, in Pilates, in karate. So many, I've done all of these, but I never knew that that was the science behind it.
Yeah.
And of course, another question, I don't know whether you can answer this, you know, when you're under pressure, we sigh. Is that the body going,
oh my God, did you read this research, Conal? You must have, right?
No, I'm just interested.
So this is fascinating, right? So I used to tell people about the physiological sigh. That is, so let's be clear, that is the very, very best, latest evidence-based technique for this, right? But when people are stressed, our cognitive centers shut down, as I mentioned. So when you're under stress, you don't want to be thinking, oh, the physiological sigh, and get it complicated. Let's keep it simple. Longer out-breath, quicker in-breath. So the physiological sigh is the creme of the creme. That's the one you really want. And it's simply this. It's So it's like a So do you ever see when people are
do
sort
that
of
again.
Oh, so it's,
and I just wanted to hear you say, blow your nose again.
So do you ever see somebody when they're panicking or crying or overwhelmed? It's like that. That's the automatic response. That's the body trying to slow down the system.
Really?
Yeah. So if you can do that.
So for those who can't see him, he's taking two big snuffles up his nose and then a long breath out the mouth.
Out breath. And it releases an extra bit of carbon dioxide. That's what the second breath is for. It's two short, quick, sharp breaths. The second one is to get that extra carbon dioxide because, as we all know, if you try to hold your breath, you will feel stressed as the carbon dioxide builds up. So that second one is really to get into the alveoli, into the lungs, and really clear that out. And that is the really best. But for anyone that struggles with stress or anxiety, just think 3 seconds in, 6 seconds out. Do that 5 or 10 times and you feel very zen.
And I know this is the kind of stuff they should be teaching in school, isn't it?
God, yeah.
Why don't they? I mean, I don't know why I'm asking you, because it's something to do with the department or somewhere.
Well, to be honest, I do it in a school. So I work in a school in Tallaght called KCS, Killinarden Community School, and I run a mentorship program there, and these are the tools that I am teaching in that program. So it's brilliant, but it's only on a small scale. We done a beta test last year. I'm taking the 5th and 6th years this year, which I'm really, really looking forward to.
This is a national school or secondary school?
It's a secondary school. Yeah, we're taking 16-year-olds, 5th and 6th years in a secondary school. And these are the skills that they need. Like, what good is all of the knowledge about geography, accounts, whatever you learn, if you can't go out and manage your anxiety or communicate or be happy in the world, you know?
And if you're doing an exam.
If you're doing an exam.
And you freak.
They're the basic foundational skills we need, you know?
Hack number three, please.
Hack number three. I'm going to go to exercise. So stress is the momentary, when you are feeling momentary stress, you should focus on the breath. That breath technique is phenomenal. But I think what's really important, what's probably more important, is removing the barrier of the problem. Like, don't let it come. Like, instead of waiting for the problem, get rid of the problem before it even arises. So good sleep, good nutrition, absolutely critical. I just do everything that I didn't do in my addiction. That's my life hack. Do the opposite of everything you used to do. So I eat well and I get good sleep. That's really, really important. Good relationships. Obviously, you cut the head off any mental health issue if you really get to the core of those things. But the hack I want to talk about is exercise. And I'm going to talk about the science behind it and a really powerful reason why you should exercise. So it's my personal number one domino. When I exercise and move in the morning, and I'm not talking, it doesn't have to be an hour long run or anything like that. It's just moving, get movement into your body.
Such as? What do you do?
Oh, right, personally, I do. I like exercise. So I don't spin class this morning.
Did you always like exercise?
I hate it with a passion. I hate it with a passion.
You're talking to that lad here.
Am I interesting? And one thing that I will say, if you're trying to create a habit, we can get on to another habit hack in a few minutes, but if you are trying to create a habit, one of the most important things you have to do is not try to get up and climb Mount Everest every day. Do something that you enjoy, even a little bit. Make it easy. Don't kill yourself, because motivation isn't in our heads. People think motivation is inside of us. Motivation is within the environment. Like, some people say they're not motivated to run. If I got a very vicious dog behind them and says go, they will run. They are motivated to run.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1,
go, go, go. You know, so motivation can be tricked and played with, and habits can be played with as well. So it's really important to do an exercise that you enjoy. Like, my partner doesn't enjoy exercise and she wants to exercise. She sees the benefits that I have. I have lots of energy. I have lots of energy, and I'm predominantly happy a lot, and I put a lot of that down to exercise as setting my intentions and the kickstart for the day. But she doesn't enjoy that, so we're thinking of trying squash soon, because she's very competitive and she'd love to beat me at that, I would imagine. So we're trying to make it fun, you know, and that's really, really important. But in terms of whatever the exercise is, the reason why it's so important, and I found this sort of neuroscience pathway from Dr. Rhonda Patrick, another phenomenal researcher over in the States. She is brilliant. When it comes to nutrition and stuff like this, she is phenomenal. The pathway she talked about, she didn't find this pathway, but the one that she talks a lot about was called the Kynurenine pathway. Now, I have a few big words here, scientific words, but the pathway is quite simple. So we have a precursor. It's an essential amino acid, an amino acid called tryptophan. And this can be a precursor to serotonin, which, for want of a better word, is the happy neurotransmitter in the brain. So when we have high levels of serotonin, we're happier. So people with depression take serotonin medication to make them a little bit happier. Now, what else tryptophan can turn into is a metabolite called kynurenine. And kynurenine is used to fight inflammation. And inflammation isn't just the scars and the wounds that we can get on our body. Inflammation is can occur through stress, especially chronic stress. So if you have chronic stress again and again and again and you're suffering, like the body's releasing cortisol, you're having that fight and flight response, that manifests itself in the body as stress, physical stress. And it needs kynurenine to fight that inflammation. Now, when your body is fighting stress on a regular basis and it's using that kynurenine, a byproduct of kynurenine is a thing called quinolinic acid, and it's a neurotoxin for the brain that robustly predicts mental health difficulties like anxiety, stress, and depression. But if you exercise on a regular basis, you turn that tryptophan into serotonin, you fight that inflammation in a different way. So if you don't exercise and you struggle with chronic stress, it's a double whammy, triple whammy, because not only do you have less serotonin in your brain, you also, the tryptophan, instead of turning to serotonin, is converted into kynurenine to fight that inflammation. And it also creates that neurotoxin for the brain that's linked to mental health challenges. So exercise, like, is so good in so many ways. It just sets your intentions. Mood follow action. Mood follows action. This is something I truly do believe. And it really sets the tone for the day. But you're also increasing the amount of natural serotonin. It's the most natural antidepressant in the world you can take.
Dr. Brian Penny, you hold it there for 1 second because we're going to bring you another bunch of hacks. But first of all, we do have to go for a break. Before I do that, though, all of these great Brian Penny insights are brought to you thanks to De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best shaving oil, not a beard oil, made in Mayo, sold worldwide. And Brian Penny just told me he uses it. True?
Very true. Very true. It's brilliant. I came across it in the gym, and it was one time that my shaving cream, I think the cap fell off in the gym, and obviously whatever way I put my bag in it, and a shaving foam was all over my bag, and I had this very small, perfect little bottle of De Facto, and it feels so good on your skin when you're shaving.
Oh, we really love you does. And Tom Murphy's going to love you. Let's take a quick break.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
Viscosity. When you shave, you want the highest viscosity because it helps the blade run smoother. De Facto, the world's best shaving oil, has incredible viscosity. That's why De Facto leaves your face, underarms or legs nick-free. Higher viscosity makes blades last longer. De Facto is the best for your skin and your pocket. DeFactoShave.com.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
And I'm here with Dr. Brian Penny, who is on this special. This is episode 101 of That Great Business Show. And it's all about life hacks and how to be a better human being. Brian Penny, make me a better human being.
Right, let's try. So one of the most important things, it hooks into a couple of things we've been talking about, like taking action, the 5-4-3-2-1 rule, exercise and stuff like that as well. And it's basically this idea that mood follows action. And it's about setting your intentions. It's about taking action to feel better. And lots of people tend to think that you feel a certain way and act as if. And that's the way it is for most people. I'm not in a good humor, so I'm not going to do that. I'm in a great humor, I'm going to do that. But we can hack into our mood by changing how we act. And this really came to me personally from a theory of emotion. It's called the James Lang theory of emotion. So William James, one of the most prominent psychologists of all time, that was part of his theory. And what he suggested, now it's not as clean cut as this. This was many, many years ago. But what he suggested was that we act a certain way and then we feel. And the essence of this was captured in a little caption in a book, the textbook that I was studying at the time, of this little bird sitting in a tree and this older man underneath the tree. And he says to the little bird, "Ah, you're singing because you're happy." And the little bird says, "Don't be silly. I'm happy because I'm singing." And it just struck such a chord with me. It's resonated ever since. And it's just that idea. Mood follows action. Motion drives emotion. And that's why exercise is so important to me, because I have a tool in my locker. And anyone that exercises regularly will notice that when you exercise, you feel better. So when I wake up in the morning and I say, right, I'm not massively up for the day. This is going to be a challenging day. I'm not even in the humor of getting out of bed. I'll 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'll jump out of bed.
You're forgetting the go.
Go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Go. Jump up into action and exercise. And the action of that. And I'm always fascinated by the my mindset. So, and it's not every day. Most days I wake up and I want to go to work. So I've set that tone and motion. I've reshaped my brain. I've created an action bias within that as well, I suppose. But some days it's just like your energy's a little bit low when you wake up. Not in the humor of facing the day. But I know once I take certain actions, I can change my mindset on a physiological level. This changes on a physiological level. And I'll jump into action, I'll exercise, or other hacks that if people don't like exercise, we can talk about to change.
Keep talking.
To set yourself up and change how you feel. And it's really, really important to realize that you, like, the world can beat people down, like it can be stressful. And it's like you're getting pulled around by the strings like a puppet. But you can take the strings and say, no, I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to act and I'm going to feel differently based on those actions.
What would you do? What do you do? And in particular, talk to me about the one that I'm really interested in, the no exercise one.
The no exercise one. Right. Brilliant.
But to be fair, I do 5K a day. So
you do, do you? Yeah, okay. I thought that. I could just see in your physique, actually. So one of the tools that was really important to me is it's called the MAVIC technique. It's a personal routine for me. It's called MAVIC. It's an acronym. It's for meditation, affirmation, visualization, inner child work, and gratitude. We don't have to talk about all of them. I used to do it in the order of AVGM, and it was called Avagam, but it didn't have quite the same ring to it. So we went with MAVIC.
It almost sounds like magic.
Magic, it does. It does. And basically, that was my morning routine for a long, long time. I create a course on the back of that. I create a program. I call it my program for life. It's what I deliver into the corporate world as well. It's a sort of refined all of these tactics and all these tools into 6 modules called a program for life. And a big part of that is around the action orientated element of that. And it's about creating a morning routine. For some people, it's journaling. For some people, it's exercise. For some people, it's visualization. Whatever it is, whatever works for you, really important if you want to carve out a positive habit.
Talk to me about the journal. This podcast used to be presented with me with Jamie Heaslip. And oh. I know lots of things about Jamie Heaslip, but two of the things that he does every morning, a lot of exercise, but he journals every morning. What's that about?
It's really powerful. Journaling, Arianna Huffington said something one time that really, really captures it for me. It's like window wipers for the soul. And it's just putting stuff on a page. And people get caught up in what journaling is. And it's literally just putting things on a page. It could be a brain dump. It could be writing how you feel. It could be just letting it flow and not knowing where you're going to go. Could be writing a question up the top or a topic up the top and letting it flow from there.
And what happens with physiologically? What's going on there?
Oh, I journaled for a long time and then I had this realization that, God, I haven't journaled in a few years. And this was after I wrote my memoir. And then I just, you wrote a memoir, that is the Mount Everest of journaling. And the shift I had in that time from speaking to me mom, from writing about it, because clear writing is clear thinking. Sometimes writing makes us clarify what we're thinking and we tend to go deeper on that. So when we clarify what we're thinking, thinking is intrinsically related to our emotions, like, it really, emotions and thinking go hand in hand. So when we think more clearly, we feel more clearly and we can make sense of our emotional world, our inner world. So I think it just provides this sense of clarity and it allows us to go, maybe to be more vulnerable if we need to be more vulnerable. It brings an awareness into our lives and points us in a direction of where we need to go.
As somebody who doesn't journal now, I write all day, but that's a different thing. To journal, how long? Was it 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour?
Again, I'm harping back on whatever works. So if you say an hour and then you do it for 2 days and you don't do it ever again, well, an hour wasn't for you. If a minute is all you can manage, do it for a minute.
And what would you put down in a minute?
God, you could just write down, clarify your values. What are your values? That's something that I do on a regular basis. What's my values? Am I going to live by my values? Then I write down the values.
And if it's not intrusive, what would you write down as your values?
Not at all. Energy is my number one value. The energy, the more I have, the more I can give. And I protect my energy with my life. Relationships, health, boldness. I love to be bold. I love taking risks, taking chances, put myself out there into the world. Inner peace, clarity, lots of different things. But they tend to change over time. Like a flexibility, an ability, a psychological and emotional flexibility was not one of my values until COVID-19 came along and everything was thrown up in the air. We didn't know what the future looked like. So all of a sudden, flexibility was elevated right to the very top. I need to be an ability to pivot in this changing environment. So,
like a good pivot.
So it nearly, values for me are like your true north to point you in the direction of who you are and where you want to go. So it could be anything. What's important to you in life? That's your values. So journal for 2 minutes. What's important to you in life?
And if I write down, say, what's important to me, family and friends and stuff like that, that will help me mentally? Or will it help me? This is a business show, not a psychology show, remember?
Yeah.
So does it help me in my business?
100%, right? So there's a great line that I came across, and clarity was a value of mine, really important about making decisions and stuff like that. And I came across this metaphor by the Great Britain Rowing Team. You might have heard it before, Colin. It's, does it make the boat go faster? Have you ever heard of the book? No. So the Great Britain Rowing Team in the 2000 Olympics had this mantra, will it make the boat go faster? So if it did, they said yes. If it didn't, they said no. So let's say if a teammate wasn't pulling their way, will we have a conversation and pull them on this? Again, difficult choice. It's the hard choice. It's the honesty, you know, that way that you have to, it's the values-based decision. So will we have a chat with him? Yeah, it will make the boat go faster. He needs to start pulling his weight. I'm feeling a bit tired today. Will I skip training? Will it make the boat go faster? No. I'm going to do training. So I love the clarity of this mantra. And they went on to win 5 Olympic gold medals or plus.
Such a man, Redgrave.
I think he was on the team. Yeah, I think it was the manager of the team that really
big
was
lad.
Huge. All them rowers. And I love the clarity of that mantra. Now, I didn't have a rowing boat. So I'm like, right, how can I introduce this into my life? So I came up with a metaphorical boat for my life. And my metaphorical boat is grounded within my values. And I've worked with teams and with companies with this as well, clarifying your values. Does it make the boat go faster? So I worked with
the values
that orientate the company. So one company I worked with, a big financial company I worked with, their goal was to be the number one customer obsessed team in the country. So every question they ask themselves, will it make our boat go faster? Will this make us the number one customer obsessed focused team in the country? So if it did, they said yes. If it didn't, they said no. So it's really important to, and clarity was one of my core values. It's the reason why I came up with this mantra as well. And some of the biggest decisions, groundbreaking decisions, have come on the back of this idea of making these values-based decisions as opposed to the feelings-based decisions that aren't going to serve you long term.
You must have sat down and gone through your values and then discarded some and knows that's better. That's not me. Something. How did you achieve that, or where did you come from?
Yeah, it takes time. And go back to your question as well. And I think this is really important. Like it's what what is journaling? I think questions are brilliant. Questions are really, really brilliant. I often ask myself, like, what am I constantly avoiding? Because it's often what we avoid we need to go towards. It's something I'm struggling with right now. My company's doing very well at the moment. I was had a chat with Bernard Bourne last week. He's a mentor of mine. He's the CEO of Davy Group, a good friend. And Bernard described it like, he says, like an elastic band. And you have a load of bricks in that elastic band. And for a few years now, you've been pulling that elastic band back. You've been working on the business. And now all of a sudden, it's released and all these bricks are flying at you and you're trying to catch some, dodge the others. And a question that I've come up with on the back of that is, if I'm saying yes to this, what am I saying no to? And that's a really good question if you're quite busy, because we tend to be people pleasers. I think Irish people by default tend to be people pleasers. So if you're saying yes to every coffee shop break that someone's offering you to go on, why are you actually saying no to? And I think that is really, really important to clarify what you may be saying no to if you're saying yes to other things.
But do you know what you're saying no to?
Well, for me right now, I'm saying, if I say yes to things right now, I might have the space, but I'm closing the door on white space. I like to have white space for potential opportunities that are coming down the line.
But, okay, but how do you know what's going to come down the line?
Right, so let's clarify this even more, right? So let's say there's a limited amount of time we have in the day. We sleep for 8 hours. We work for 8 hours generally, right? So let's say your value is your family and you're working 60 hours a week and then you're going out with your friends and this, that and the other. So if you're saying yes to all of these things, you're saying no to your family.
Okay.
So that's just a really clear way of looking at that. So that's where the values piece is really important. What is important to you? And so if I'm saying yes to this, am I saying no to any of my other values? And it has taken me a lot of time to go back to your question. It's taken me a lot of time and I'm constantly looking at and reflecting on my values. And it happens through experience as well. Like questions are really important, as I said. Like, and one of the questions I often ask people if I'm working on clarifying their values is, if you were to, at your own funeral tomorrow, what would you want your loved ones to say about you?
I've often thought that. But then I kind of say, do you know what? I'm dead, so it doesn't really matter.
But that's very true. Well, it wouldn't matter then. But you're using the question as a conduit to think about the now. So loyal, kind, sharing, family person, strong. So are you living...
Too late.
Too late. Very true, very true.
Give us another hack there.
Another hack. Right, so one I love. So we talked about the morning routine and the Mavic technique. We went off track there a little bit.
But you can go back into your Mavic.
Go back to the Mavic technique and mindfulness. I'm not going to talk about mindfulness because we all know about mindfulness, and most people do anyway. But what I would say in terms of the hack on that, and this is taking an idea from cognitive psychology behavioral psychology. So we associate things with things. This is how we learn. This is how trauma works. It's how PTSD works, and it's an association with something that's happened in the past. So it's about hacking into that and creating new associations. So James Clear, brilliant book, Atomic Habits, came up with this idea of habit stacking. He basically came up with a language around this. So it's stacking a new habit onto an existing habit. So every time I heard of this, like my morning routine was taking time, I was getting busier, I was saying, how can I utilize this time? So I began stacking my mindfulness practice onto my brush and teeth practice, which was already established. So I started doing that about 2 or 3 years ago, and every day I mindfully brush my teeth, 3 minutes in the morning, 3 minutes in the night. And it just creates this really powerful association that I can't even do it on autopilot anymore.
Tell me what you actually do. So you're there with your Colgate going, yeah. And what are you thinking? Oh, what are you know what?
I'm not thinking. So I focus. So mindfulness, the essence of mindfulness is noticing things in the present moment. So there's great anchors like breathing and stuff like that, but you can use anything, and sensory experiences are brilliant. So I often just feel the vibration in my hand or the bristles on the toothbrush. And I'm human, so I'll often go up on into my head and I'll be thinking about my holidays, what I have to do tomorrow, but I bring it back again onto the sensory experiences for a few seconds. I probably go off into the future again and I bring it back. And that is the essence of mindfulness. That is the practice of mindfulness right there. Lots of people think mindfulness is sitting all zen in a room for 30, 40 minutes. I know people that do that and then go out and fight with the traffic. You know what I mean? So it's about making it applicable in the real world. And what I find is by using these little mini micro meditation moments and habit stacking your meditations onto other things, and it is really, really powerful. And don't think you're doing mindfulness wrong if your mind wanders and you could be gone for a minute or two. The essence of bringing it back and catching yourself in unawareness, that's the practice. That's the moment when you actually change your brain, the magic moment when you are transforming, reshaping your brain. That is where it's at.
And you'll also get very nice teeth.
You'll also get very nice teeth. Double win.
Now, back to your Mavic, that's your mindfulness.
Mindfulness. Affirmations is number two. And I used to think affirmations was kind of a fluffy concept years ago because I was getting really deep into the science. But like, the words we speak become the house we live in. That's my favourite quote by Hafiz. And one of my personal, so I had it, my personal experience in addiction was I didn't have a heroin problem. I had a thinking problem and an anxiety problem, which I medicated with drugs. And when I had this shift in perspective in 2013, I retrospectively realised that a big part of that shift was that my mind went quiet. It was a gift I was given. I don't know why it happened to me. It happened through the suffering that I went through. And I wanted to know, why did I suffer so badly with my mind and emotions? Why did I not suffer anymore? And how could I share this with other people? So I went on a journey. That's why I'd done a degree in psychology and a PhD. I became a student of life, I suppose, but I wanted to learn. That was one of the big questions. What is the relationship between language, thinking, and our emotions. And it's captured. Language is a vehicle for emotions. The words we speak become the house we live in. If you tell yourself you're a piece of crap, you're no good at anything, you're stupid, you're ugly, whatever that is, whatever your personal narrative is, some people can be very hateful towards themselves, so that inner critic, whatever your narrative is, your primary narrative, you're going to feel the emotions of that as well. So affirmations are simply verbal statements that affirm a more positive mindset. So mine is simply, I'm happy, positive, energetic and carefree. But I try to embody that. I try to feel that and visualize that I'm happy, positive, energetic and carefree. And when I do that 10 times, I feel like there's something shifting inside me.
And is this looking into a mirror? Or?
No, I just do it lying in bed. I just do it lying in bed, yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't always work. And I've talked to some people. This is why I always say, what works for you? Because I've coached some people over time and they say, yeah, but I'm just saying I'm lying. I says, no, you're not, you liar. And I get that. Where I respond to that is it's to do it consistently over time, because the primary narrative of my life was, I can't cope. I can't cope with anxiety. And what was the consequences of that belief? Give me drugs because I can't cope. The primary narrative of my life today is, adversity doesn't stop me. It fuels my ability to thrive. And that was kind of an affirmation in my life as well. And I remember one day a few years ago, I had this realization. Something happened, a big challenge happened. And I've had multiple challenges. Even COVID, my book launch was ruined. I was supposed to be on the Ryan Tuberty show. Got wiped out 26th of March, 2020. I still haven't had a book launch. me PhD, primary study, wiped out in an instant because of COVID. And I found myself smiling in the face of adversity, because challenges are fuel for growth. That was the narrative I gave myself, the affirmation. And I remember just realizing, wow, I lean in when bad stuff happens. So it wasn't initially, I didn't believe it initially, but by acting towards it and repeatedly saying it to myself, I got closer to it. So you can start to fuel yourself into it. I often think there's a thin line between self-delusion and self-belief. I border it. I cross it regularly. But it's
A lot of people are deluded.
Yes.
I could have played football for Dublin or something like that. And you say, but, no, you couldn't.
This is it. So it's like using these mindset hacks to sort of fuel yourself into action, for want of a better word.
Okay, so that's the A, that's the affirmation. V
is visualization.
Now, this stuff I love, because I used to really believe this stuff. And every time I see a Johnny Sexton or somebody thinking where the ball is going to go,
yeah,
I say, that's visualization. And it just makes so much sense to me. You're the expert.
It can be anything you want to do. I tend to do it a little bit differently these days. What I used to do in the past was, because I was very nervous going on podcasts, I was very nervous doing talks at the start of me public speaking if I was going on radio, but I'm comfortable within that now, thanks to the breathing techniques and other things, experience and stuff like that as well. So, but if you're starting off with visualization, just visualize what your day is going to look like. Visualize the future. If you want to write a book, visualize yourself writing first few pages. If you want to live in the Alps and have a beautiful life, visualize yourself out on the balcony, basking in the light, smell it, embody it. Whatever it is for you, it's different things. What I used to do with the talks, I'd visualize myself being emotive, confidently being emotive and speaking to the audience. And it's like a rehearsal in your mind. And one powerful thing about visualization is, like, when you are experiencing something, like, I'm really enjoying this podcast and my eyes are taking in this information. This is a good experience from an evolutionary perspective. My brain is saying, come back here again. It's great fun. It's great crack.
You're very welcome to come back.
Lovely, lovely. So what you're doing is you're lighting up the occipital lobe, the back of your brain, and it's related to pleasure and dopamine and drive and energy and all these different other neurotransmitters, and it's firing them. But the research shows that you fire many of the same neurotransmitters just by visualizing those experiences.
Wow.
Really, really powerful.
That's
really,
very interesting. Really powerful. So if I imagine I'm on a beach in Spain or something.
Yeah, you feel good. Go to your happy place. Like that's the key.
Well, I'm in my happy place in this studio.
Yeah, yeah.
That's wild.
So it really, like, we can manipulate like ourselves on a physiological level. Like if you, like one of my primary studies when I was in psychology, I'd done a mood induction on people. I induced some people into a positive mood, some people into a bad mood. And what we done was we got them to think about things that were happy in the past. We played really happy music and we gave them happy statements. Whereas in the other condition, we done the opposite. And people's moods shifted. So you can manipulate yourself. And that's happening at a physiological level. Like it's serotonin, it's dopamine, it's all of those neurotransmitters. So that's what visualization can play into. And gratitude plays into that as well. But a really powerful life hack that I've been working on recently is around this idea of, let's say it's a challenge, so a challenging event. So let's say you crumble in the face of your boss. Let's say it's a boss who's a little bit mean, isn't too nice. And once they speak, you crumble and you get stressed and you get anxious. Well, what is your optimal self response? What would you like to do in that situation? And what you can do is you could visualize your optimal self response. Maybe it's deep breathing. Maybe it's saying, stick your job, I'm going elsewhere.
I was
going
to say, at the door.
At the door, yeah. Maybe that's your optimal self-response. And in the moment when that happens, you're going, the bodily response, the automatic response will kick in. So what we try to do is take out the videotape of what happened in the past. It's like the visualization. Take out the videotape, replace it with your optimal self-response. So let's say in this moment, it's taking a couple of deep breaths to calm down the system, calm down the brain, calm down the body. And you replay that on a regular basis. So you wake up in the morning, you visualize your optimal self-response, whether it's with your spouse, whether it's with your boss, whatever that is, and replay that on multiple times. And then when the big moment comes, your opportunity comes, you've played that. You've nearly replaced that memory before it even happens. And it's a really, really powerful way.
One thing that's wrong with that theory is half the audience here would not know what a videotape is.
Very true. Oh, God, yes.
You hold that thought, because Brian Penny, I want to come back to hacks. But first of all, we will go for a quick break.
Thinking of travel? If so, make sure to make Defacto, the world's best shaving oil, your choice of travel companion. A 25 milliliter bottle of Defacto means no hassle at airports, no bulky cans to carry, and the guarantee of the world's best shave. DefactoShave.com.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with five-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
That great business show.
I'm here with Dr. Brian Penny, and we are talking about hacks for life. Brian, another one, please.
Another one. I'm going to go to my favorite hack, and it's a metaphor. And I know this resonates with a lot of people. It's something that I speak about on a regular basis. And it's a keynote talk that I actually do. It's around control, what we can control and what we can't control. And it's all about self-awareness. And people tend to try to control the things that are outside of the control. And that's where a lot of anxiety and stress comes from.
And is this the sea of the Mavic?
No, did we skip on? No,
well, we were at V.
I is inner child work. It's a bit deep for a business program, so we leave that for another time. The G, Mavig. So there is gratitude. And gratitude is basically one of the most powerful states you can be in. If you are being grateful for something, even when I speak about it, something shifts in my body, it really does, probably because I practice it for a long time, but it's being thankful and appreciative of what you actually have in your life, of the things that are in your life. And when you are practicing gratitude, like, it's hard to be angry. It's nearly impossible to be angry, jealous, all of those negative emotions when you're being thankful for what you have. And similarly to the visualization experience, like, if you are being grateful, and I would advise people to stay away from the 3-point gratitude list. I'm grateful for my job, grateful for my family, and grateful for the trees, whatever that is, because you habituate with that over time. And we habituate, if you get anyone that's gotten a new car, you habituate to that as well. We get used to even the best of things in life. So it's about keeping it fresh and keeping it novel and keeping it new, because we love novelty. Humans love novelty. So what I tend to do that works really, really well for me is I would pick one particular thing that I'm grateful for and try to go deep on that. So right now, I'm going to do this off the cuff. I had a really great chat with my partner tomorrow. We're going on holidays and we're chatting about what the holiday is going to look like. And we really went deep about what we're going to do. And we were chatting about happier times. Then we dug into the happier times, and she has a daughter, and we are chatting about the good things we're going to do with our daughter. And it just went deep into all of those things. So we are grateful for, I was grateful for so many things. So if I was thinking of that right now, I think of all the good conversations I have with my partner. I think about all of the good stuff that she's done for me. I think about the holiday to Morocco we went on in April. And I'll think of the fun things, the camel ride we went on. And I remember that picture where we're just all smiling and we had so much fun. I can feel my body smiling just thinking of that experience, because the visualization is kicking in from the gratitude. I'm thinking of that experience. The neurotransmitters are lighting up my system and I feel like I'm smiling from the inside. And that is the power of gratitude right there.
The camel obviously didn't belch in your face.
It didn't. It was a good experience. We're all dressed in the robes, the Araby robes and all. It was brilliant.
So that's the Mavig.
That's the Mavig.
So back to your C4, what was it?
So the darts. So that's Mavig. That's yeah. M-A-V-I-G. That's the full one right there.
Of all of them, you've got a million of them.
Of all,
what's the bestest?
The bestest was the one that I just mentioned a minute ago. And I do want to get into mental models as well. So we get into that in a few minutes. No, but this first and second darts metaphor is probably the most important one. It's just the one around control, because we tend to
C for control.
So we tend to try to control the things that are outside of our control. What are people saying? Do COVID-19, the war in the Ukraine, the future outside of our control. The past, outside of our control, it's done and gone, but we resist it mentally in our minds. And this idea of things that are outside of our control, there's a lovely metaphor from Eastern philosophy called first and second darts. And the first darts are the darts that life throws at us. And if we live in love, we will experience first darts. COVID-19, lockdown, people will get hurt. If you live a full life, people you love will die. It's the essence of human existence. You will experience forced darts. Definitely people will say and do things to you that you don't much approve of. Forced darts, nothing you can do. But this is not why we suffer. We suffer because of the second darts, and these are the darts that we throw at ourselves. So let's give you a little example of this, something that might resonate with the listeners. So imagine there's another lockdown, hopefully not, but imagine there is another lockdown outside of our control. We're stressed, we're anxious. It brings up memories of the previous lockdown where your partner really struggled.
And there's no toilet paper.
Yeah, big thing outside of our control. And it's a forced dart. So you're in lockdown, your partner is really struggling. They might say something that's a little bit mean, a little bit passive aggressive, and you're all of a sudden, boom, you retaliate. Second dart. You had a choice. You didn't have to retaliate. It turns into a full-blown argument. You say things you don't mean. The kids get scared. They come in, try to break it up. You scream at the kids. Another second dart. You run out screaming, stand on the kids' Lego, hurt your leg running up the stairs. Another second dart. But then it calms down. You feel guilty because you got so angry, said things you didn't mean. Another second dart. Then you feel sad and depressed because you don't think you're a good parent. Another second dart. You wake up the next day feeling low and lacking energy. You don't do your morning routine. Another second dart. And this is how many people live their lives. These second darts triggering other second darts. Now, the essence of this to escape these second darts, and there's a lovely line by a guy called Viktor Frankl. So Man's Search for Meaning, he wrote the book Man's Search for Meaning. He was an Auschwitz survivor and a phenomenal psychologist who was in 4 concentration camps. His family were killed. He was savagely beaten. The worst of human suffering was done to Viktor Frankl. But he remained the master of his own inner world. And there's a line from his book, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is your chance to choose your response, and there lies your growth and your freedom. The stimulus is often a forced dart outside of our control. The second dart can be something that we don't want to do, and we need to eliminate or reduce those second darts. That's just it's a maladaptive response. But there is a space between the forced and the potential second dart, and we need to increase that space. Now, there's loads of ways of doing that, like meditation, mindfulness, what we discussed, self-observation is something that I practice myself, just inwardly looking at my feelings, keeping one eye on my feelings, my emotions, my thoughts. Exercise can sort of lower the levels of stress so you don't go as reactive and it increases the space. Journaling, lots of the things we talked about. But when you increase that space, you're less reactive and you're more likely to respond in a rational manner, to take the breath, to respond in a more productive way.
Wow. Come here to me. You turned your life around, so it's possible.
It's more than possible. It's possible for everybody. It really is. It really is. That's what I'd say. There's hope for it. Even people in deep addiction out there, there's always hope. I was in the depths of despair, twisted in my mind. There really is hope for all spectrums of life.
How bad were you?
Oh, God. I was chronically addicted to heroin for 15 years. I'd done heroin every day for 15 years. The only days I didn't do it is when there's what we call a drought. And there were some of the worst weeks in my life where I just couldn't get it. But I still got methadone during them times. Like, so I was on a methadone program for 12 years. I was given urines in a clinic once a week, going in, drinking methadone in front of the chemist because they didn't trust you every day. I was as bad as you can get in terms of the level of drugs I was taking. I was taking up to 20 tablets a day, drinking vodka, everything to numb the pain. I still held down a job for much of that time as well. So
wow.
It's, yeah.
Did you?
I did, yeah. A lot of people find that strange, but it's very regular. It's actually common. It's more common than people think. Yeah. It's the stereotypical Hollywood transporting addict that we think of, yeah. That is an outlier, to be quite honest. It's not an outlier as such, but it's people in addiction and holding down jobs is more regular than people think. It's basically people who are traumatized, people who are really struggling and trying to medicate an emotional pain that they can't regulate themselves.
Because it's quite common.
It's very common. I would say everyone's addicted in some form or another. Maybe the Dalai Lama is the only one that's not, but it could be addicted to thinking, to work, to exercise, to podcasts, phones, eating.
There's nothing wrong with being addicted to podcasts. You know the final question we ask all our guests, and that is, who would Dr. Brian Penny... Sorry, just a quick question about that doctor. When you got your PhD, emotionally, what did you feel like?
Wow, it felt huge. So interesting. I don't really celebrate me wins massively, right?
Do you
know? No.
I thought that was meant to be a thing to do.
It is a thing to do, right? It's interesting. What goes up must come down. So if something makes you really, really, really happy, the lack of it will make you really, really, really sad. So I'm careful about celebrating. It's good. It's nice to celebrate your wins. Definitely celebrate your wins. But be aware of something that makes you really, really happy or gives you loads of pleasure. The lack of that is the pendulum swinging in the opposite direction. So I always try to be aware of getting too caught up in things so they stay in balance and don't go too far to the ends of the extremes. But I was very surprised by my reaction when I got the PhD because, God, I put a lot of bloody work into it. But when I got it, it was just this... they came back, they went off into the room and it was on Zoom actually because of it was through COVID and he went on, he says, we'll come back to you in a minute.
And for those who haven't done this, that's called Viva Voce.
Viva Voce, yeah, yeah.
Which
yeah.
means that you are now defending your work. Claims in the work.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a 2-hour interview. They've read your research. They've gone through everything you've done for years and they came back and they came in and he says, we have your results, Dr. Brian Penny.
Oh, yes.
And it was just like, beamed. It was like an energy just coming out of me. I was surprised by how much, I wouldn't say relief, it was a beautiful moment, a beautiful energetic moment, and I was surprised by it and gratefully surprised by it because I just felt wonderful. I really did.
I'd say you probably did.
Yeah.
Final question, back to it. Higher in a heartbeat.
There's a couple of people, so we didn't get a chance.
You're allowed to have as many as you want.
Brilliant. So I didn't get a chance to chat about my mentors today.
Oh, yeah, because you are a big, big proponent
of
mentors.
Big proponent of mentors. And in 2017, I cold emailed some of the most influential people in Ireland and some of them that got
25
back
of them.
25 men, 25 women. And some of them include Anne Herity, Carolyn Lennon, Julie Cinnamon. I've had great, they've been advocates of me and given me advice. And I have a couple of really great mentors. So Mick Slane, who is the founder of Robus LED Lighting Group. It'd be phenomenal. Mick's just become a great friend. We meet once a month and he gives me advice and it's nearly back and forth now as well. I try to help him out a bit as well. It's definitely more from him now, in fairness, let's be real. But Mick is just he's just an action machine and we bonded over our values. He loved that I did what I said. He told me a few things and I went off and done them and got back to him and he loved that. And we've just created this wonderful relationship. On the back of that, Bernard Bourne, who I mentioned earlier, Bernard eyed me regularly as well about talking about advice on and thinking tools and mental models and stuff like that as well. Bernard's been phenomenal for me. And another guy called Hugh O'Bourne. He was the former vice president of IBM. And Hugh was just a mentor of mine. I'd meet him on a regular basis once every 2 months. And the three of them guys just gave me phenomenal advice. The advice they give me, and I've other mentors out there, but those three are regular and they give me phenomenal advice in different ways, which I love. And sometimes it goes against each other. It's not always the same advice, but it's all good advice. This paradox, holding a paradox and conflicting ideas that are both truths is a really interesting thing. So that's been phenomenal as well. So I heard the three of them in a heartbeat, but they're probably outside of the realm of my of what I can pay at the moment, let's say. And so is the next person I'm going to say that's a little bit different. And it's Niall Breslin, commonly known as Brezzy. And the reason why I'd love to pick Brezzy is, so he was actually a sports star. He was a gal man. He was a rugby, professional rugby player. He's the lead singer of the Blizzards. He's a phenomenal speaker, but he's a brilliant thinker. And me and Brezzy initially were going to write a book together, and he's gone on to do podcasts and different things. But a lot of people start to see Brezzy as more of the singer or the mental health guy. But he's a phenomenal thinker. A phenomenal thinker. He's one of the cleverest people, if not the cleverest person I've ever come across. And the reason why I'd love to hire him is because we actually think differently as well. We conflict on our ideas. And I love getting critique, and I love people clashing with me in a positive way, a positive clash in terms of that. And he would be the person I take on for multiple ideas. Super smart. And he'd conflict with me as well.
And you know who I would send to you on that basis? He's a guy who's on the podcast with me, a fellow called Paul Galvin, the GAA, Kerry GAA star, superstar. His brain is unlike anybody else's that we've had on the podcast. He's beyond creative. Just a fascinating guy to listen to. You should listen back to the podcast.
I'll be reaching out to him. Yeah. That's what I do. That's what I do best.
Because again, just to go through that again, you did something so simple. Well, because I heard what you did, you guessed their email.
Guessed their email. I just guessed the email. It was like, be
so
born.
Here comes random man, Brian Penny. You didn't have your PhD at that stage, did you?
I didn't.
And you just sent these things off and said what?
I said what, right. So I called, the subject line was taking a punt. That was the subject line. It was the same scripted email to everybody. And I spoke from the heart. I done a retrospective analysis of this email. If anyone wants to see the email I wrote and an article I wrote on the retrospective analysis of that, it's on my website. You can go to my website, brianpenny.com.
Penny, P-E-N-N-I-E.
Yeah, is it on the website? The website is in flux at the minute. I'm changing it over. The website is still working.
But it's there. I was on it this morning.
No, it's still working, but I think the blogs might be changing. So if they look up how I got interviews with the most successful people in my country, that's the name of the blog. They'll get it. They'll get it if they Google that. And it was really, I spoke from the heart. Like I literally said, I gave it a little bit about my story. I'm going to do a PhD. I'm a ridiculously enthusiastic learner and I want to learn from people further along the path. And whatever I'd done, I think I created a sense of intrigue. I had a mission, I had a story and something about the email. Like it was an 81% success rate. The amount of people that got back to me was phenomenal. And it created a customer base for me, which I didn't even know I was doing. An army of mentors. It was one of the best things I ever done in my life.
There's another little hack. And I want to point out another thing. You've had an hour chat with me, no notes. Everything that you have mentioned came straight out of that incredible brain of yours. Wow.
Thank you very much, Conal.
Dr. Brian Penny, we are impressed. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much. It was an absolute privilege. Brilliant.
Well, thanks for joining us on The Great Business Show. And that was it, or is it, from That Great Business Show, episode 101. And now you have just listened to an hour's chat from Brian Penny that could literally change your life or the life of someone you know. Isn't it only right that you share this podcast with them? Take the link you're using, drop it into your WhatsApp and send it to those you know or think you think might benefit from hearing such common sense. And can I suggest you do it right now? Because it's the kind of thing that you can long finger. And I'm sure, Brian, that there's some science behind that. Why do we not just do it now?
Because we negotiate ourselves. The negotiation kicks in. That's why.
So they should do it. I mean, you're agreeing with me. Do it right now.
Do it right now. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Go. Oh, I like that. Yeah. And also, why isn't your business advertising with us? Great companies like Big Red Cloud, Microfinance Ireland, Virgin Media already do. Have your business support what our listeners called Ireland's best business podcast by advertising with us. And we record here at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where today's sound engineer is the studio manager himself, the main man, Peter Rice, who makes us sound unbelievable. And if you want to record a podcast here, do use the team at the Dublin South Podcast Studios. They are great because I say so and because, well, I kind of know. And if you'd like the media group to produce a podcast for your business, then talk to me, Conall O'Moran. Find me on LinkedIn or anywhere else. All of our great business insights and tips are brought to you, as always, thanks to our sponsor, Brian Penny's favourite shaving oil, De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best all-natural shaving oil. They back us. Please back them. DeFactoShave.com. We'll get them. And also, and finally, don't forget to buy Business Plus magazine, where we now have our regular column all about the podcast. So from me, Conall O'Moran, Míle Buíochas for listening. Agus slán tamall.